From the Denker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm your host, Roger McDonough. Coming up today on the show, we'll check in with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker for our monthly conversation.
One of the real joys for me of this job as being mayor is the interaction I have with mayors from around the country. We are, in some respects, very different than what we see at the national level and in most states at the state level. And so activism is part of our DNA.
Also, KCPW's Ryan Cunningham takes us to the Capitol for a sometimes emotional meeting between Utah lawmakers and the LGBT community.
She said she wasn't judging my lifestyle, but she preferred not to have people like me working there.
Plus political cornflakes with Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr. All that just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And thanks again for tuning into KCPW this afternoon for The Rundown. A little bit later, the next in our monthly series of conversations with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. But first up, it's been weeks since an LGBT non-discrimination bill gasped its last breath in the Utah legislature. Ultimately, the Senate Republican caucus decided the bill was too risky to hear while the state was attempting to defend its same-sex marriage ban in a federal appeals court. But for many people, including the LGBT community and its allies, the issue never went away. On Wednesday night, Republican Senator Steve Urquhart, the sponsor of SB 100, and Democratic Senator Jim DeBacchus, who himself is openly gay, hosted a meeting of LGBT individuals and Utah political figures, including Senate President Wayne Niederhauser and Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox. For a synopsis of that event, here's KCPW's Ryan Cunningham.
SB 100, Senator Steve Urquhart's ill-fated LGBT non-discrimination bill, never got a hearing in a legislative committee room this year. But in some ways, Wednesday night felt like an unofficial committee hearing, with legislators gathered to hear members of the public offer their perspectives on an issue to which their lives are indelibly tied. As legislators filed into a standing room only meeting, some 300 people showed up altogether. Urquhart explained the intention of the meeting was to educate.
It's something where I have learned a great deal over the past year, and I thought it would be a tremendous opportunity and idea to have an informational session.
The legislators and attendees were treated to over a dozen testimonies from Utahns with varied personal experiences. Nearly all of the stories shared were impassioned and emotional. Utah singer-songwriter Justin Utley shared a story of losing his partner Brent to a heart attack. Because neither of them were out publicly, Utley didn't attend Brent's funeral. Not long after Brent's death, Utley had an unexpected conversation with his employer.
She told me she had been monitoring and reading my emails and asked me point blank if I was gay. I told her yes, but that this had nothing to do with my job. She replied that it did. She said that had they known I was gay during the interview process, they would not have hired me. She mentioned that there was a woman more qualified than me who had interviewed for my position, but that they didn't offer her the job because she had been seen with one of those equal sign stickers on her car and assumed she was a lesbian. She said she wasn't judging my lifestyle, but she preferred not to have people like me working there.
Utley was given 2 weeks to find a new job and was then let go. Candace Metzler, a transgendered woman, spent years closeted from her friends, family, and coworkers. She was a successful business owner and even started her own nonprofit. But she continued to struggle with her gender identity, and after a suicide attempt, she came out. This started a long series of setbacks for Metzler, who lost her job and was left homeless. But with help from some friends and her family, she was able to turn her life around.
I'm here to tell you that I was lucky. I had a community and a family that cared enough to do something about what they saw. For my family, it did not matter that they were LDS and they did not fully understand. Their love for me and my family is what mattered. Because of these amazing people, I was able to continue going to college, and today I'm nearing the completion of my doctoral degree at the University of Utah. I did not give up.
Joey Eccleston is a straight married man, but he came to speak on behalf of his gay teenage son, Connor. Eccleston gushed about his honor roll student son, who founded the Gay Straight Alliance at his high school and intends to earn a doctorate in physics in college. Eccleston got emotional when he recalled the time Connor came out to his parents at age 15.
In that moment, a lightning flash of fear struck me. The fear was not knowing that I would be able to protect my child from the intolerance of the outside world. So many things raced through my head in that fraction of a second before I turned to Connor and said, "I love you." Never let anyone tell you who you can love or how you can love. We love you.
Eccleston mentioned that Connor wants to leave the state of Utah for college because he fears how he will be treated here.
Connor has sat at the desk of the renowned astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson and discussed physics and doomsday comets. But some people choose to define Connor by his orientation, which should be simply a footnote to the character, the aspirations, and the accomplishments.
Many in attendance on Wednesday night were left teary-eyed, including Utah legislators. Democratic Senator Luz Robles seemed profoundly affected.
I know that this is probably one of the hardest issues for me to discuss because it's personal. And I know it affects loved ones in my family. And to think that in the state that I represent and that I proudly call home, their rights are not protected is heartbreaking. And I have to go to bed thinking that I'm not doing enough. And I apologize because I don't think we're doing enough as legislators to fight for your rights.
Robles went on to say that the legislative process would eventually win the day. Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox praised those who had the courage to share their personal stories with the panel and offered his insight on the issue.
This is said by many people who believe it, that we hate the sin and love the sinner. And I had a friend that said, "You can believe that, but if you ever have to say it, you probably hate the sinner just a little bit." And I thought a lot about that, and it was something that touched my heart. So again, I just thank you for your courage. Thank you for sharing your stories. Thank you for being Utahns, because we're all different, and that's what makes Utah an incredibly great place to live.
All legislators who attended on Wednesday night were pleased with the event and felt it was a constructive conversation. Senate President Wayne Niederhauser, who was in attendance, later said that the event was a, quote, eye-opener for him. But he didn't indicate that he was ready to put LGBT non-discrimination legislation back on the agenda in the near future. For KCPW News, I'm Ryan Cunningham.
Utah Governor Gary Herbert was in Washington this week to meet with President Barack Obama. So what did they talk about? I posed that question to Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune and author of Political Cornflakes, a daily online roundup of Utah politics.
You know, it wasn't about their really great friendship, that's probably for sure. And I don't think Herbert was praising Obamacare. I wasn't in the room, of course, but that's just my guess. No, really what they talked about were a couple different things. The drought, of course, that's really affecting the American West, and some efforts that Herbert's hoping the administration can help with when it comes to understanding the major problems that the Western arid states are going to have this time. Along with that conversation was, you know, some talk about wildfires and combating wildfires. And the president has a new plan to try to use money in a different way, essentially, to try to do fire prevention. In the past, essentially, they keep borrowing money to fight fires from a, you know, fund that actually is supposed to help prevent them. And they want to try to get that so it's not essentially always borrowing against what would actually be better to stop in the first place. And of course, the big thing that the governor is always asked to about when they go to the White House, which is flexibility, and especially for flexibility for Governor Herbert's plan right now to expand Medicaid through more of a block grant situation and just let the state, you know, take the federal money without all the strings attached.
It's interesting because it's not necessarily actually Medicaid expansion. It's the governor's own plan, but he wants the money that would go to Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, exactly. Again, this is something that all the governors want. It's just flexibility. They don't want the federal government telling them what to do with this federal money. They just want to have their own plan in place. And, you know, it sounds like the White House and the Health and Human Services Secretary Sebelius have really tried to work with some states on some of these things. They are going to have to get a waiver from the secretary to do so. You know, I don't think they get any hard and fast agreements while they're at the White House. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I guess so. That was going to be my next question, is whether or not there is maybe there's a tacit agreement. Maybe there's not. We don't know.
Nothing in writing yet, and I think when you deal with Washington, you always need it in writing, right?
Absolutely. Hey, Thomas, I'm going to change topics kind of wildly here. The Tea Party movement is turning 5 years old this week. Do you think it'll last another 5 years?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, they had a big party this week. Senator Mike Lee, of course, spoke at it. A bunch of the other Tea Party luminaries, and really heralding that this is just still kind of the start of the movement. Obviously, they've made some differences. They have Tea Party people elected to Congress and the Senate and the House that they've, you know, pushed through some spending cuts. But in the end, they still think there's a lot of fight left. But of course, the poll numbers are not really bearing them out that there's as much support for the Tea Party anymore. December actually showed in a Gallup poll the lowest support for the movement since it began 5 years ago. I just talked to Congressman Chaffetz about this earlier this morning, and his point was, you know, look, you may not be seeing, you know, rallies out there all the time, but people are still very concerned with the size and scope of the federal government and will be as long as President Barack Obama's in office. So I guess we'll wait and see. You know, if it's Hillary Clinton who's elected next time, then I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And, you know, Mike Lee's point is, Senator says that, okay, we've kind of started the movement, but now we need to, you know, add a little meat to the bones. We need to actually start doing something about it. We can't just complain all the time about government spending. We need to figure out how to do it. So he's saying the next transition, I guess, for the group is to stop being the people holding rallies and complaining and having, you know, signs and flags and actually have some legislation or some actual changes that they can make it happen.
Engaging in the actual legislative process.
You got it, exactly. Of course, he's going to need a few more Tea Party buddies to do that because right now, you know, they don't have enough to pass anything.
Well, Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune, thanks once again for joining us today.
Thank you, Roger.
We speak to the Tribune's Thomas Burr weekly, and you can find a link to the blog Political Cornflakes at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And now on The Rundown, we're joined by Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker for our monthly conversation. Mayor Becker, thanks once again for carving out this time today.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
You know, since we last spoke, you wrote an op-ed that appeared in the Salt Lake Tribune recounting your experience in the days after same-sex marriage became legal in Utah. And you're also one of more than 360 mayors in 40 states now who have signed something called the Freedom to Marry petition. I guess this is mayoral activism to a certain extent. That's where I'd like to start our conversation today, discussing your participation in that collaborative action.
One of the real joys for me of this job as being mayor is the interaction I have with mayors from around the country. And when we get together, there is an energy there because at the local level, at the city level, we are out there doing things. And we are, in some respects, very different than what we see at the national level and in most states at the state level. And so activism is part of our DNA. We have to get things done. We want to get things done. Our community expects us to get things done. And that means being active in a whole variety of areas. And we've seen that in stepping out on the climate change issue, where over 1,200 mayors, I think it is, and cities have signed on to Kyoto Protocol and are now taking additional steps beyond that. Right. And we're seeing it in a variety of areas, but gay marriage is one of those. And I signed on to it. I had been reluctant to sign on to it in the past because I'm a constitutional officer in the state of Utah. We have a state constitutional provision that prohibits gay marriage and anything that a civil union or anything else that could be like a gay marriage. And So I felt that it wasn't appropriate for me until the law of Utah changed to actually support gay marriage as a legal matter. But when it became legal, and we obviously, and I experienced that, I felt it was time to move forward and join the hundreds of other mayors around the country who are supporting legalization of gay marriage.
All right. Hey, I'm going to wildly change topics here. This last month, you visited some retail locations to get input from the public on something called the Mountain Accord, which is a collaboration among government and nonprofit groups and regulatory agencies to, quote, form a long-term plan to ensure the vibrancy of the Central Wasatch. That's taken from a press release from your office. The idea is to plan the future of the Central Wasatch Range with a variety of stakeholders, including the public. Is that plan starting to take shape, and how will it be presented? How will it be used?
For many of us who live along the Wasatch front or the Wasatch back, the Park City, Summit County area and our immediate vicinity, there is no more defining part of our geography than the Wasatch Mountains. And I'm certainly one of those people who fits into that category. For Salt Lake City specifically, we have responsibility for watershed. We supply water to half of the valley in Salt Lake, and we're responsible for protecting that watershed and that water supply. And we also have, obviously, an enormous number of users of the Wasatch for recreational purposes in a whole variety of ways. Many years ago, really a generation ago, 25 years ago, Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, and the Forest Service all adopted some plans that have provided direction going forward since then. When the Ski Link proposal came forward, and I and others took a very strong position against Ski Link, it was not because we are anti-ski area. To the contrary, I think they provide incredible benefits to us as a community and as a region and state. But it was a very poorly conceived proposal for a variety of reasons, including effects and potential effects on our watershed. Mm. So I and others began to pull together literally every single interest, every jurisdiction, local, state, and federal, the private businesses who have an interest, the environmental groups who have an interest, and say, let's take this upon ourselves to define the future we want for the Wasatch. It is so valuable to us. We now have everyone together. We have a whole variety of public and private resources led by the state of Utah's funding to define over the next year what our guidance is going to be for these Wasatch Mountains for the next generation. We're determined to do that. We have the consultants on board. We started the public process on that with some meetings a while back, and I and others are encouraging people to get involved. If you care about the Wasatch, tell us what you think. Tell us the ideas you have. Mm-hmm. Respond to both the information that we're developing and collecting and analyzing, and reflect with us on what the best options are going forward, whether that's transportation, whether that's recreational use, whether that's protection of our resources, whether that's how our economy for the region or in specific areas are affected, and tell us what you want, because our hope and expectation is that at the end of this year, we will define things like what areas are we going to leave alone, mm-hmm. and not have developed that should be under special protection? What areas might ski areas expand in? What should development be or not be in places in the canyons or in the canyons themselves and in the valleys surrounding them, supporting this regional asset we have? What should our transportation system be? We know that cars aren't working in the canyons today. We have too many times of severe congestion, and it's also a public safety issue with the kinds of avalanches we have, right, and conditions we have in the canyons. So we're hoping to define what we are going to do going forward. So it's more than just a sort of a general plan. We're hoping to get very specific and have that serve as direction for the future of the Wasatch Mountains, and we hope people will get engaged. And that's the reason I was out on a Saturday and visiting various locales and trying to make people aware of it and encourage them to get involved.
You know, there used to be a train from Salt Lake to Park City. Any chance we're going to see that again?
Well, actually, it is not something to kid. So we're going to be looking at options that include a train. Mm-hmm. And there's already been some preliminary analysis that have looked at the concept of what it would take and whether or not it's feasible to run a train from our existing line, light rail line running down the middle of the valley, up to the mouth of the canyons, up the canyons, through the canyons to Park City.
Right.
We now have 1,200 miles of tunnels between Little Cottonwood Canyon, Big Cottonwood Canyon, and Park City. You can walk today in tunnels from Alta to Brighton. So this is not out of the realm of what is feasible. But we've got a lot more analysis to do to decide both what we want to do, how we would finance it. So we're, in a way, at the beginning stages, but we want to set that direction so we can make decisions for our future and for the Wasatch and be comfortable and then work as, you know, really as a region to accomplish our goals.
Great. Hey, I'm going to switch gears again because I'd like to ask about something related to city finance, which is the estimated $1.5 million shortfall that came from lost parking revenue. This is a Tribune article that I read. What does that do to this lost revenue? What does that shortfall do? And was it something that the city expected?
Well, we're not completely surprised by it, but it certainly is different than what we had projected for our budget for this year. And In the article that was in the paper, it said, well, you know, this is a result of a failure of the new parking station system. Actually, we're seeing really the projected amount of revenues we expected from the parking stations. We're getting actually with certainly some very strongly held objections to the stations. We're getting general support for how they're working and how it makes it easier for people to access parking downtown. But we're also seeing a shortfall, and most of the shortfall comes from the fact we're not issuing as many citations, which people probably are happy about, but right. It affects our revenues, whether that's parking revenues or traffic violations in the city. So those are all sort of in one collection of areas. It means we have to adjust our budget because those revenues aren't coming in. I don't think it's a huge concern. We have almost an $800 million budget in Salt Lake City, so... You know, $1.5 million, why really important, is something we will adapt to as we go forward. And we really are still just coming to understand fully why there are differences in what we projected and what we received. But it's not a source of great concern for me or for the city.
There's been speculation that, so violations are definitely part of it. The fact that people aren't getting those tickets and therefore not paying the tickets, you know, increasing the coffers of the city. But there's also been speculation that maybe people aren't coming downtown as much, or if they are coming downtown, they're choosing other means or parking other places. All of these could be potential.
Yeah, so we've taken a look at that because we saw the statements in the paper by a council member or two saying, well, this is a reflection of a disastrous effect on downtown. And the fact of the matter is, our downtown use of retailers, restaurants, the kinds of uses where people use parking are up very significantly in this last year. So actually, to the contrary of what was suggested in the paper by a couple of the city council members, we're seeing the use of downtown continue to increase. And that's what we want. We want a vibrant downtown, and that's happening. We actually think the pay stations are probably contributing to that because it is so much easier now. Once you learn the system and realize change is always tough for people because you're not just plugging a quarter into a meter or 10 quarters as the case may be. And we hope people will come down, will experience the system, will learn how to use it. The easiest way to use it is if you're a smartphone user. There's an app called QuickPay, QP, and any of us have used it. It's like, this is the grand solution for ease of parking because you can't get it wrong. It's easy payment, and it will remind you if your time is running out. So it's a... we think the system is actually working well, and we're just adapting to changes in the revenues that come in compared to what we were expecting.
Okay, finally, because we're low on time, I'm gonna switch to tomorrow. You are launching the Hive Pass. Maybe you can remind our listeners quickly, if you can, what it is, how they can get it. Where are you guys launching this? And give us an overview.
A few years ago, one of our great city employees and gave us this great idea that why don't we offer a reduced fare transit pass to every resident of Salt Lake City? And it sounded like a great idea. And so we have been working with the Utah Transit Authority now over the past 3 years to figure out whether or not we can do it and then how we would have a pass that would provide a reduced fare, a reduced annual pass for the residents of Salt Lake City. We are launching that on March 1st. It will be the equivalent of a 70% discount on an annual pass. And we are excited based on the response we're getting from people. We'll have a lot of users. And, you know, the advantages are, first of all, air quality is probably number one. You know, that the more people who use transit, the fewer people are driving their cars and the more we reduce emissions. But it also improves our whole quality of life. So this is a pilot project, a one-year pilot project by UTA and Salt Lake City. UTA has been great to work with on this. There are a lot of details. Salt Lake City is absorbing the administrative costs. UTA is taking a risk that there will be enough people who sign up for the program to basically offset the revenue loss they have to be able to run their system.
Right.
So we're hoping a lot of people sign up. We encourage people to sign up. It will be available at locations all over, and you can come to our Salt Lake City website. You can pay it off as part of your public utilities bill, your water bill. You can come to the city county building. We'll be at places like the Sorenson Unity Center. We'll be at libraries spread out over the next little while to try to make it easy for people to come in and get their passes. You'll need to come in and get a pass. This is a photo ID pass. It's only available to Salt Lake City residents.
Right.
We hope it's successful so that we can continue and maybe other communities can consider something similar.
All right, trying to lead by example. Mayor Becker, thanks for taking the time to come in and speak with us every month.
Great. Always good to be with you. Thank you.
That was Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. You can find this interview and all of our past programs at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And that does it for our show today. The Rundown was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Next week on the program, tune in for a look at domestic violence in the state of Utah, as well as the drought that's plaguing western states, and more. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at KCPW Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.